Are you going to warn people?
I am going to warn them. Today's episode contains graphic descriptions of drug use. Okay, let's go.
I recently met a man in North Carolina, and the first thing he told me was to call him Bone, a nickname. The second thing he told me was that he died last week.
I died Thursday, and I had to go to the hospital. Somebody dragged me in.
An overdose. Heroin. His friend dropped his body off at the doorstep of the emergency room and left.
What does it feel like to die?
Nothing. You just basically, you hit your rush after you shoot, and then you wake up in the hospital.
This is common in Bone's world. When we meet him, he's preparing for the next time. He's stopping in at a drug outreach center, picking up a medicine that will bring you back if you overdose. He's sunburnt and well-dressed, but he's also disheveled. I think he looks a bit like a frat boy who shipwrecked on this North Carolina town.
And the reason we wanted to talk to him is because Bone is a dealer. He sells heroin. But he also uses it a lot. He shot up just a few minutes before talking to us, and he already has some set aside for later.
What is that?
That's heroin.
How much does that cost?
That cost me $9.
$9?
His afternoon fix cost less than a pack of cigarettes. And that low price is a big reason why Bone is living in a world with so many overdoses and so many addicts. America is facing a heroin epidemic. Death by overdose has tripled over the last decade.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Jasmine Garz.
And I'm Alex Goldmark. Today on the show, how heroin became such a bargain and why America bought into it.
And how Bone got rich and then died trying.
Support for today's episode of Planet Money and the following message come from Audible, who has more than 250,000 audio programs from leading audiobook publishers and business information providers, including Presence, Bringing Your Boldest Self to Your Biggest Challenges by Amy Cuddy. Audible is offering Planet Money listeners a free 30-day trial membership and a free audiobook to get started. Go to audible.com/planetmoney and start listening anytime, anyplace.
To understand how America got hooked on heroin, the real start of the story, it begins in a boardroom.
In the 80s and early 90s, a company called Purdue Pharma is faced with a problem. The patent on one of its drugs is going to expire. It's a painkiller commonly used for terminally ill patients, and generic competition was going to cut into the revenue. So they decide they need to make something to replace it, something big.
They kick around some ideas. They think, could we make a pain pill that could reach even more patients? Something for injuries, for backaches. Those people need help with pain every day, over and over. And what they come up with, you have heard of it, it is called OxyContin. It's considered a breakthrough when it launches. The ingredients in it are nothing new. The big deal is that up until now, pain pills last up to 6 hours. OxyContin, the company says, can last up to 12 hours.
Patients loved it because it keeps the pain at bay for longer, and doctors loved it because they're told it's not that addictive. And users on the street, they really love it because you can crush it up, snort it, shoot it, and get 12 hours worth of a big fat high all at once.
Around this time in Jacksonville, Florida, in a poor neighborhood, there's a lonely kid growing up. His father is an alcoholic who beats him. His mother leaves the family pretty early on.
And that kid, we've met him already. That's Bone, the drug dealer who died on Thursday. Ever since he was little, Bone only wanted one thing.
Money was my life. Like, I had never had it. I mean, my father had money, but he had took me to an orphanage when I was 13. He said, you can go here, go live with your mother.
By the time he's 16, he leaves home. A young kid with nothing, just a lot of anger and hurt. He needs a way to get money, quick. And he sees people using and abusing painkillers everywhere.
So Bone hatches a plan. First, he finds an MRI technician and he strikes up a deal. He says, I will pay you to give me scans of people in pain. Give me your worst stuff.
Their L2s and their L7s were messed up. To this day, I don't quite even know what that is. But I know the L2 and the L7s were destroyed. That's what the MRI said.
Serious back injuries.
Bone gives those MRIs to his friends and drops them off at the doctor's office, where they ask for pain medication. And they get it, pretty much every time.
I sold pills for a long time. I was very successful at selling pills.
He even has a whole menu of special prices. $10 for one pill, or 20% off for regular customers when they buy a 10-pack. Some people were buying by the hundreds. He tells us he was pulling in around $700 a day at the peak.
I wasn't even 19 when I owned two cars, a motorcycle, an R6, and I owned my own house.
Bone is living the dream. Life is like this big party for him. And he pops a couple of pills between selling to customers.
So life for a dealer at this point is pretty sweet. Now let's see how it was from the customer point of view.
Meet Gray. Gray is also a nickname. If Bone is like the kind of guy you sneak around with at night in your rebellious phase, Gray is the kind of guy that you want to bring home to mom and dad. He is a very handsome guy. He has a winning smile. He's from a tight-knit middle-class home. And his childhood was filled with family trips and fishing with his dad.
We usually just surf fish, so flounder, black sea bass, trout, all kinds of stuff. Just depends on what's out there that day, I guess.
When Gray is in college, he works at a restaurant for extra cash. And one morning, he's driving to work. There is a bad storm, wet roads, and he skids out and crashes. He is lucky to survive, but he ends up with a broken sternum, lacerations, and he is laid up and in pain for months.
His doctor prescribes him painkillers, and he hates them.
They upset my stomach right away, and I didn't like the way they made me feel when I was actually in pain.
But he sticks to doctor's orders, a couple of opiate pills a day for almost 2 months, and in the end, they do help with the pain.
For most of us, this seems pretty normal. You get injured, you go get pain pills. Maybe you go back and get more when that runs out. But for the longest time, that wasn't normal. So for this story, we talked to several doctors, and they all told us that if Gray had gotten an accident, say, 10 or 15 years earlier, he wouldn't have gotten almost 2 months' worth of painkillers all at once. Doctors would have been way too afraid of addiction, of giving too much of a dangerous drug all at once. The doctors, they told us again and again, they would have had to say no. And they told us how hard it would have been to look at a patient like Gray and say, I'm sorry, you are going to have to live with some pain.
So remember that boardroom where we started off, that new drug? That's where everything changed. When Purdue Pharma launches OxyContin, it comes along with this massive multi-million dollar advertising campaign that says to doctors, you don't have to worry so much about addiction. These opioid pills can be prescribed in large quantities, safely.
It is at this moment that the whole way we treat pain in America shifts. It's not just this one drug. It's a whole new way of thinking about opiate painkillers in general.
And so Gray got his prescription because at this point, why wouldn't he? It's completely normal, and they work.
Until the prescription ran out.
After a day of not having them, it was pretty miserable. I was very depressed, and I didn't really understand why.
Gray says he felt what he calls a hurt, and he thought it was from the injuries. He figured he just needed more pills.
I didn't even look at it as an addiction. I didn't understand it. It was a concept that I was blind to simply because the doctor had given them to me. And I thought, well, I don't understand why, you know, they gave me a lot and then wouldn't give me any more.
He didn't really understand that this hurt was, in fact, withdrawal. He just knew it felt like the worst flu he had ever had. And he felt inexplicably sad and deflated. But for all his anguish, it wasn't at all hard to get more pills.
He jokes that he knew a lot of people with back problems who'd sell him a pill here or there. But eventually, he turns to a dealer. Because within a few months, he is using 3 or 4 pills a day.
I feel that I reached a point of no turning back, so to speak, or realizing that I crossed a threshold at about the point where I started using them with my nose and switching to a needle.
There are times when he wants to stop so much, but he finds he can't even function without the stuff anymore. The hurt is stronger than the want.
And so, by the late 2000s, this was the new normal. Customers, like Gray, hooked. Dealers, like Bone, getting rich quick. And all these pills changing hands so easily from doctor to dealer to user, it is not going unnoticed. Bill Baxley is with the DEA. He was used to focusing on cocaine, weed, mostly coming from Latin America. And then suddenly, there's all these pills coming from doctor's offices.
And it was so bad at times we'd have people literally lined up around the block in and out of these clinics or doctor's offices. I can use that term very loosely. And, you know, they were just writing a prescription without an examination, without any medical need at all.
He's not having it. And so the crackdown comes, and it comes from all corners. People start to sue Purdue Pharma for making false claims about addiction. Three executives at the company, they eventually plead guilty to misleading the public, and they and the company have to pay $600 million in fines.
States and cities take on dealers, doctors, and what they call pill mills, those clinics that dispense painkillers like they're candy.
Pills become way harder to find. Our college student Gray, when he does find pills, they are suddenly really expensive. What used to be $10 a pill is now $30 or more. Gray says he was spending around $150 a day.
Our dealer, Bone, he has two problems. One of the doctors that got busted is his doctor, so he no longer has a supply. And his second problem, remember, for the last couple of years, he's been dipping into his own stash. So Bone finds out he's totally hooked.
I ran out of pills, and I was like, oh my God. I didn't know what being dope sick was at the time, so I found out real quick.
And so now Bone, the dealer, and Gray, the customer, are both feeling exactly the same hurt, and they can't afford what it costs to make it go away.
It was terrible. I mean, the pain, the nausea, the backaches.
Couldn't find anything else to use, and I felt truly trapped.
There is a cheaper fix.
And that is when I discovered how cheap and readily available heroin was.
There's a reason why heroin was just sitting there waiting for Bone and Gray.
Our DEA agent, Bill Baxley, he told us a story about this. It's all about competition. In the last couple of decades, Americans have primarily gotten their heroin from Latin America, specifically Colombia and Mexico. Colombia made really good quality stuff. Mexico? The heroin there was considered pretty bad.
But as Americans started to use more and more opiates, Mexican cartels had this epiphany. Americans love this stuff. Let's just make ours better. So they put a ton of energy into figuring out how to make heroin that is seriously powerful, easy to shoot up, and will drive the competition out of business. And their strategy worked. Bill Baxley has seen their product flood the streets.
And now you can easily see it 40, 50% pure, and sometimes higher, depending on, you know, what it's been cut with. So the potency of the heroin is off the chart higher than it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Our college student, Gray, who started this whole journey because of a car crash, he says he found himself suddenly in places he never would have imagined.
The very first time I ever did heroin itself, I had to go to a sketchy motel in a downtown area, and I had to pick up this dude. I had no clue who he was, and he was about twice my age. I was in the passenger seat of a car, and it came in a Powerball ticket, and I snorted it, and that little bit of powder that was a lot cheaper was a lot stronger.
He says he can spend half the money and get even higher.
Gray nosedives into his addiction. He gets over his fears of sketchy motels and rough neighborhoods. He spends years in them, in fact. He sees friends overdose, and he goes broke.
Meanwhile, Bone, the dealer, he's a survivor. He's a businessman. He's a hustler. He follows a connection and moves to North Carolina.
I can go get raw heroin and cut it myself in a coffee grinder. I'm not going to go into the whole details because everybody doesn't even know what heroin's cut with because I don't want people out there doing it.
Bone still thinks like a businessman, but his behavior, way more like an addict.
Bone shoots up about $1,000 worth of heroin every week. There's no more easy money. These days, Bone sells heroin mainly to feed his own habit. I could tell you a lot more about Bone. I could tell you about how he got married to a former user, how they had a baby. I could tell you what his favorite TV show is or what his favorite food is. But here's the thing. When I meet Bone, he hasn't even eaten in 3 days because he's on a binge. Heroin is everything to him. There is nothing else.
Remember, this is a man who died of an overdose last Thursday and got up and went right back to using and right back to selling. He says that dying and all this death around him, it's helping his business. Death is good marketing.
Honestly, in the dope game, if people start dying off what you got, everybody wants it. Because it's potent. It's good. You know what? You tell me right now somebody died off of... What's the... Blue smiley faces. You tell me somebody died off that, which I know for a fact people have died off of it. Right now, that's what I would go look for. Because I know it's more potent.
You and I, if we're lucky, maybe we'll cross the line between life and death once, maybe twice. Heroin users, they play hopscotch on that line.
Our college student, Gray, he spends 6 years on that line. He hits rock bottom, but he's lucky enough to have family that intervenes, and they support him through his recovery. He's been clean now for a few years. He's doing pretty great. He's back in school.
Bone keeps on using heroin. No one intervenes. No one is coming to save him. And he can't save himself.
He says the only way he'd be able to stop is if he went to jail, where he thinks it would be harder to get heroin.
You can't just stop. Physically, like, everything is so painful. It controls you. It controls you. I wish I would have never touched it. I wish I would have never touched it.
We've been talking for hours. It's getting late. Time to go. I say goodbye to Bone, and it occurs to me that at the rate he's going, I might not see him again. But I do, a few days later, in a mugshot. He got arrested on possession. He'll be released next year. In the picture, his eyes are dark and swollen. For the first time since I've met him, he's smiling ever so slightly. As if this could get any
harder, we're flying over troubled waters. We reached out to Purdue Pharma for this episode. They wrote us back and they said, for more than a decade, Purdue Pharma has undertaken efforts to help address the opioid abuse and addiction crisis. They said their products represent less than 2% of all opioid prescriptions. Newer formulations of OxyContin are also harder to abuse. If you like this episode or if you like this podcast, why not tell a friend about it? You can tag us on Facebook or you can find us on Twitter. We are at Planet Money.
Special thanks to two doctors who helped us understand this whole story. That's Dr. Andrew Kolodny and Dr. Thomas Buchheit.
Today's show was produced by Jess Jang and Elizabeth Kulas. And if you're looking for another podcast to try, check out StoryCorps. It's a show that collects unscripted stories about real-life, heart-to-heart conversations. Find the StoryCorps podcast now on the NPR One app or at npr.org/podcasts.
I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Alex Goldmark. Thanks for listening.